The Tights and Fights podcast, for over 6 years, a revolutionary force in sports and entertainment.
Yeah! Here comes the howl, here comes the yell, here comes the Lindsay's, they are the panel. They've got a podcast. Tights and Fights is the name.
Take the last train to Wembley. There was no car at the airport. You can take a bunch of selfies while the other wrestlers snort. It's time to go. Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no, no, no. And now Tony Khan has got to send you home. Welcome to Tights and Fights, the show that discusses wrestling with the sincerity and hilarity that it deserves. I'm Big Taka Punk.
Hold up. Nope. I'm not going to redo these. I'm so sorry. I did not have new nicknames.
I was on a roll, Julian. Did you hear it?
I'm proud of you, Hal.
It doesn't
I'm
get better that. Than that. One take, Lublin.
I didn't want to ruin it by like giving you repeated material from last week. I did
how
not
good,
have.
How good was that song, right? That
was
good.
It was pretty great.
That was a good one.
I was bopping Thank along. You. I was
all
bopping
first
along
draft.
Happily.
First draft.
Everybody gets their shoot names this week because I forgot nicknames.
I'm Hal Lublin, and I'm joined today by my fellow members of the Nation of Conversation, Danielle Radford.
Hi, hello. It's warm.
And Lindsay Kelk.
It is. I second what Danielle said. It's too warm for nicknames. That's what I'm going to say. It's
hot, sweaty. So hot and sweaty. Oh, boy. Let's jump right in. It seems like this year we've gotten more stadium wrestling shows than ever. And the latest was AEW's All In live from Wembley in England. Before we get to all the real juicy drama, Danielle, you watched the show. I know Lindsay and I did not. What'd you think?
Well, you know, I am really big on what is happening with I'm Better Than You, Baby. I love Adam Cole. I love MJF. I love the two of them together. They had that really fun, like, chair spot. And this was one of the things that I'm digging about. And who knows what way they're going to go with MJF if they turn him into more of a tweener. Because right now he's pretty tweener. And I feel like a lot of people are like, turn him into a full-on face. I'm like, I think this is as face as he gets. But it's good because he can be the kind of face that, like, an Eddie Guerrero was a face where it's like, oh, he's still going to lie, cheat, and steal. He's still going to do the Bugs Bunny stuff. He's just going to, like, not be, he's not going to do it to the wrong people. You know what I mean? Like, he's just still, he puts it on the people who deserve it. Him and Adam Cole had this really fun, very Eddie Guerrero-esque chair spot. And I think that if they're able to open the show and it's really fun, they're able to close the show and it's really fun, that was great. The women's match, it was all right. I don't know about the choice for Saraya. We'll see how that goes. She has lost a step, and I think that that's a fair thing to say when someone's been out of the game for this long and then jumps back in. So hopefully that closes up, because some of those moves were real dangerous looking. There was at one point she had, I think it was Toni Storm in a in the Black Widow, not the Black Widow, but you know, she had her in the, and then Britt Baker comes and like curb stomps her there. And so the way that Toni Storm's arms are up, there's no way to protect her face for that. When like she has to go down. I mean, obviously, like, she's mostly in charge of like everything happening, but it's always nice to have hands there to kind of stop stuff. It seems like everyone's fine and there was no big deal.
Tony
or whatever.
Took a couple of bumps to the head in that match though, and that made me, because I did see the women's match, and that it made me very yikes. The whole match made me pretty yikes. The whole 8 minutes 50 seconds. That's how I managed to fit it in, because they didn't ask too much of me or anyone, including the people in the match.
Can I ask an honest question?
Yeah.
I mean, like, no joke here. I know that they cut to Mercedes Varnado, who is in the audience, and the
say
speculation
it,
is,
say
oh, she's
say her last
she's
name.
Coming to AEW.
Say it, Hal.
Mercedes Moné.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, Mercedes Moné was in the audience. The speculation is she might be doing a run in AEW. It feels like they've been dancing around one another for a while now. Let's assume, for the sake of argument, that she signs. Do either of you have any hope, based on the track record of every other outstanding woman that they brought into the company, that her fate would be any different than them?
I don't know if it's going to mean a big difference to the women's division. I know it's going to mean a big difference to the people who want to see Mercedes Moné on their television division. Like, they're going to have her, and they're going to have her on there as much as possible. Not only just because of all of the firsts that she's been a part of and all of the other great things that you can tout when you have a Mercedes Moné in the ring. Her fan base are like the Barbs of wrestling. Like, if they put her on that show and she is not given a platform to which, like, to perform and, like, really go out there and do her stuff, we will hear about it on Twitter and we will hear about it loudly. And if there's one thing that we know that Tony checks, it is Twitter. Of the gets that you could get for AEW, I put her right behind a Daniel Bryan, or even equal to a Daniel Bryan as far as like a get for that company. If she had been gone longer, I would have put her at the level of a CM Punk. It, just in terms of how fans are going to lose their shit for her. What that does to the women's division, who knows?
See, yeah, honestly, that's what I was going to say. It's like, I don't doubt that they will give her something cool to do and she'll probably get to main event a pay-per-view. They'll probably be like, this is our first women's main event major pay-per-view, because they'll have promised her those things along with a giant truck full of money. Yeah. My concern is that it...
Sorry, I think you mean money.
Money. Yeah. My concern is that it won't roll over into something meaningful for the rest of the women, because this is what happens. They sign someone big, it's an exciting moment, and then it doesn't build to anything. But like, I think you're right in that we will get something cool with her, but I don't think she would stay very long. And I don't know, I don't fault her for it in the slightest. She's a journeyman now, right? She's like, I'm going to go everywhere. I'm going to do everything. I want to do everything that I can in the time that I have. But I do wonder how much she cares, and not that this is on her shoulders or she should. I'm not saying it should be her job to build that women's division. So many people have already been there and tried to do that. But I think, you know, maybe she's just getting the payday and she'll be getting out. She's always been really honest about wanting to achieve certain things in wrestling and then getting out while she's still young and has all of her body. If this is one of those things on that list, fair play to her. Get it, get the money, do something cool. I just really hope that Tony and his booking team are able to use this spotlight and this moment, should it happen, to elevate. But I just don't have faith in them anymore that they will.
That's exactly my thought. Like, Mercedes is going to be great. They are going to put her everywhere. They are going to make sure that you know that Mercedes Moné is all in. They are going to back up the Moné truck. She is going to get everything she wants. And the thing with Mercedes is, I wouldn't doubt it if she did come in and was like, hey, while I'm here, I want to make sure that I am doing a difference for the women's division, because we know how much she cares about wrestling. But on the other hand, like, we are in SAG strike vacation season for wrestlers. Y'all are going to start seeing a lot of people y'all ain't seen in a minute back on your screens. There's a reason why this is the period where John Cena is going to be coming back and doing like a little 1 month, month and a half long engagement in WWE. There's a reason.
I guess he has 7 weeks available in his schedule.
Yeah, like, there's a reason why. And it's to take advantage of the strike. So that's going to be another thing, is that like, when all of these like Star Warses start getting ready to go and fight a war for the stars, Mercedes is going to be, you know, off, you know, at the volume somewhere acting against a green screen. So this is, I I do think like she'd probably come back and do appearances and stuff here and there. But in order to have a long lasting effect on that women's division, she would have to be someone that we knew was going to be there at least on a monthly basis for the next year in order to make that difference. I don't see that happening. I see her being a special attraction. I see ratings are going to go up. Maybe they do try to get her on there and be permanent. And who knows whether or not she would want to do that. But in order for that to be something that they invest in, you have to have the time to do that. And they've had the time to do it and haven't done it. And so we can't even rationally expect them to be able to do it on a shortened schedule, all on the shoulders of one very talented, very tiny lady.
I think that the situation that she was in WWE when she remade that division and was a huge part of that and helped put women into the forefront where they belong alongside the men, so there's really no difference. She did, having the benefit of the run that she had in NXT. And NXT is a WWE brand. So that's there's stuff built in there. AEW doesn't have anything like that. And to think that she would get treated any differently than every other woman who they brought. I mean, Soraya was supposed to be the biggest deal ever. Toni Storm was supposed to be the biggest deal ever. Athena was supposed to be the biggest deal ever.
Yeah, but we have to. I love all of them, but they're not Sasha.
Not Ruby Riot. What is she? What's her name?
Ruby Soho.
Ruby Soho was supposed to be the biggest deal ever, and they were all featured for a brief amount of time. And now it mentioned. I'm surprised at how many of those names I was able to remember. And I think that is a failing of AEW. I don't think that creative team, I don't think he cares what people are saying on Twitter, because the second that somebody says, you need to give more time to the women, the moat of neckbeards fills in and they shout them down, not because they're right, but because they're loud and they won't shut up about it. And Tony goes, they're right. You know what? They don't even drive any numbers. So we can only give them like 10 to 15 minutes a week. Like 9 minutes on a pay-per-view. We're doing great. I'm doing great. Punk. Come back, Punk.
I want the listeners at home to know that was a truly terrible Tony Khan impression, Hal, because you blinked at least 4 times while you were doing that. So.
Oh, that's because I'm not implying anything. I just have allergies. She can do whatever she wants. Go get the money. You're right. Eventually Star Wars will come calling again. And then she can go do that when stuff goes back into production. Hopefully it will. Would love to see her on a picket line one day. That would be cool, just for like a day. Mm-hmm. I'm not criticizing the fact that she hasn't, but that would be pretty cool if she would. Like all the wrestlers. If they did like all the wrestlers who were in SAG and had them come and picket together, that would be really cool.
Just an idea. I missed the D&D picket day today and I was so upset about it.
Tony is not going to do it. Can you imagine if Tony put on a minibus with like Sasha and Phil and all of his SAG members, and David Zaslav saw it. I don't see that going well.
exactly.
But I hear what you're saying. It would be fun.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm also part of why she left WWE, why she walked out is because creative didn't have anything for her and she wasn't happy mm-hmm. with that. I don't blame her upset. I don't know. I wasn't there. I know that she didn't like the creative and she walked out. So what's going to happen in AEW? She's not going to cash all those checks because she'll go somewhere else.
I don't think she'll be there that long. I think that's the reason why you can't hang a whole division on her. I think that she is going to be a part-timer. I don't think that she's going to be there long enough for it to be like a whole, you know, in order for it to like really make an impact on the division. I just don't. And again, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe they blow her mind and she's like, yeah, I'm going to do this for a year and you'll work around my shooting schedule and all that other great stuff. But considering that like she just came back and did a couple of matches that unfortunately did not hit as hard as I think that they needed to, and then immediately got injured. They created a belt for her in New Japan, and she got injured, which cost her the belt. I could also see her being like, oh, yeah, no, like the injuries stacked up against everything else. Maybe she isn't going to want to do that. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know her, but... Yeah. It's going to be fun. I'm going to watch, and I think it's going to do well, and people are going to watch specifically for her. But again, I wonder if this is going to be one of those things where, like, Sasha, it becomes, like, their version of, you know, how, like, there was Cody Island, where it was like, well, this person's really over, but we don't know what to do with them to affect the rest of the thing. And they do the same thing. They're doing the same thing with CM Punk, except he got a whole show. So I feel like she'll be off on Sasha Island while we'll watch, like, the fun stuff like that. And hopefully... Toni Storm will dramatically fling a glass of whiskey in her face just because I really like Toni's gimmick right now and I want her to be flinging more whiskey in people's faces like old school ingenue style.
Well, we'll see what happens. It'll more on that story as it develops. Now let's talk about the real main event, the biggest news out of All In, which is CM Punk getting into another spat backstage, this time getting into a fight with Jack Perry. One takes a swing at the other, then Jack Perry's in a chokehold. It's related to him taking that bump on the limousine windshield and saying real glass, which apparently was something that Punk told him not to do. So it no matter whose fault it was, when you are 40 plus years old and I don't know. You know what? Your reputation is who you are, I guess, sometimes.
Yeah, when people show you who they are, Hal, I believe that's the saying, right?
He comes back, and now he's suspended again. They're both suspended.
They're both suspended.
So
it's so ugly. It's so fucking ugly and petty.
And it's from stuff... It's from stuff from like weeks ago. Like apparently, like the dirt sheets, the backstage chatter is that this was from like a couple weeks ago when like they had like a Punk from, according to sources, told Jack Perry like, "Hey, don't use like real glass." Who knows how
but
he told
had
it.
Approved,
who knows,
right? Whatever. This is the thing I read too, and it was like, "From I've spoken to more than 12 people in AEW," says the source, but not Punk or Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy had had this spot approved by everyone, and then Punk said he couldn't do it. And it's like, why does Punk get to say he can't do it? Like,
yeah,
I don't
and then
understand.
All of a sudden, Jack Perry becomes one of those people that's suddenly not allowed in catering during Dynamite. During the pay-per-view, he gets on the car and he goes, "Real glass." I don't know. He says something.
He's like, crushing. It's real glass. Crushing the Crimea River. Yeah.
And for one thing, I'm looking at it as a fan. I see that, and I don't even think like, "Oh, this is him trying to get at CM Punk."
Right.
This is.
I thought he was talking to me as a fan, as heel Jungle Boy.
The rumors were out that he had been recommended to not use real glass. It would make sense in that instance for someone to say, in an attitudinal heel way, "Hey, this is real glass. Don't believe what you heard." But if you don't clear that with, you know, and then it becomes like a whole big mess. But either way, it doesn't, words are words. Once it gets physical, like that's when a line is crossed, period.
I'm reporting is that Punk made it physical, right? Like everyone's, that is the general reporting of there being multiple people that witnessed this, that Punk started the physicality of it.
And the reporting got better, which is that Punk yelled at Tony Khan backstage. I think the report is he said, like, "I'm done with this fucking place." Like, "I hate this fucking place." He wants to quit. He wants out. I can't imagine. Imagine if you finally were able to buy your favorite toy. You have Teddy Ruxpin, and you put in all these tapes. And Teddy Ruxpin's like, "Fuck you, I hate it here. You're not my dad.
Why are you touching me?"
It's the Treehouse of Horror Simpsons episode where the Krusty Doll tries to kill everyone. You know, it's like Bart finally got the Krusty Doll and now the Krusty Doll is trying to kill him. And I'm sorry, you knew. It's sometimes you've got to realize that the problem is with the cursed dolly. Like,
this doll was recalled, yeah, my friends. Doll, there was a recall notice.
It came with a curse. They told you there was a curse on the dolly. You still bought the dolly. So I don't really know what to tell you. And rumor is what, like, monitors were pushed onto Tony. Tony got hit by some monitors.
Why'd you make him sound extra berries and cream boy right there?
I got hit by monitors, berries and cream. He's just a lad who loves berries and cream and CM Punk. That's all. Like, don't pick on the billionaire. Stop being mean to him. It's not his fault that he signed this loose cannon asshole with a reputation for being an asshole and is now surprised that he is being an asshole. That's not Tony's fault. How could he possibly be faulted for this? I think what we all can agree on here is God bless Samoa Joe and all that's ailing him. Like, let Samoa Joe run everything, Tony. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, something that would be really helpful would be if they had someone who was in charge of talent relations that was allowed in every locker room. I think that would be a good place to start. Where a rule where maybe you aren't allowed to say the person who's like HR and talent relations isn't allowed in your locker room. Maybe that should be a rule where that person is just allowed.
I feel like we've had this conversation before, or maybe I've thought it and not said it, but it bears repeating. What the locker room misses most of all is the Undertaker. They need an Undertaker. If you were in the Undertaker's locker room pulling that crap, you're going to wrestler's court.
I mean,
that's
going to
be a problem.
I wouldn't pay $50 to watch All In, but I would pay $50 to watch the trial of CM Punk at wrestler's court. Like, I have $50 for that, Tony. Like, if you want my money,
okay.
Hey, David Zaslav, if you're listening, if you want my money, that's where it is. Get that show
Who
on
presides?
HBO Max. Get it up.
Who presides on AEW's Wrestler's Court? Oh, I kind of wanted to be Daniel Bryan. Like, I kind of wanted to
be... I mean, Daniel Bryan should be the prosecution because he's a pissy bitch. I would have Jericho be the judge.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would have Jericho judge.
He's the guy.
Yeah.
He's the guy there. He's the one to do it.
Yeah, and I would have Daniel Bryan prosecute, and I would make Punk defend himself.
And, you know, if you get Jericho... It's not going to be petty stuff like you ate chicken over somebody's bag. Like, it's going to be because it's, like, something that's important.
Yeah, and he has experience, right? He's been in Wrestler's Court. He's seen Wrestler's Court. I like this. I'm just saying, Tony, you can have this one for free. Not only can you have the idea for free, I will pay you to watch it. Yes, please.
The cases that you see today are real cases plucked out of the AEW locker room.
Oh, they'd never have time to do a wrestling show. They would be forever in Wrestler's Court.
I'm watching it. I'm volunteering for the jury box. I don't care.
Yeah. I don't know if I want Jericho to be the judge. Jericho's not... I don't think Jericho's that guy. There is no, like...
I mean,
there's
could
no
Sting
Undertaker.
Do it? Could Sting do it?
Would he want to? I don't think he'd want to.
No.
But they might make him.
This is, the problem. And of course it comes from the top. Comes from a guy with no experience in the business trying to have experience in the business and blah, 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 blah. But there is no culture there, good, bad, or indifferent. And WWE has had some of the worst cultures and also some parts of the culture, certainly now, where people are more supportive of one another. But there needs to be rules of engagement wherever you go. A social contract, actual rules written down.
Robert's Rules of Order.
Well, yeah, I know it is. You're joking, but it's true. Like, there has to be some idea, something communicated to people how they're supposed to behave. So then when they don't behave that way, you can say, we told you. What don't you understand? This is not how we do things here at whatever it is, at Frito-Lay, at AEW, in the White House. I don't care where it is.
But this is why I can't run a wrestling company. And I know so many fans are like, oh, if I had $1 billion, I'd run a wrestling company. And it's like, no, this is why we shouldn't and couldn't.
No.
Because that's what you're seeing right now. That's what you're seeing. And money, unfortunately, is not enough to hold the shit together. Because you know who had a blank checkbook and got to play with all of his favorite dollies? This guy. And look at it falling apart.
The biggest show of the company's history, one of the biggest, possibly the biggest show in wrestling history, and all anyone is talking about is what happened backstage. That's bad. And another thing is, I'm sorry, like, to start shit on that night of all nights, that is one of the nights when everyone is supposed to be all hands on deck. We are coming together to make a fucking show and to make fucking history. And you pull that stuff during this show.
I mean, just hold it in till after, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Hold your shit until you get home. You might have to get yourself home. But
you're not putting like this huge thing and giving it the reverence it deserves. You're making it about you.
I mean, shock.
And that's a huge...
CM Punk, it makes it about himself, shocker.
It's just a bummer because that is supposed to be a night when everyone comes together and celebrates this tremendous thing that they've done. And instead, we have had, like, you know, a half a week's worth of speculation, new rumors, new sources, every couple of hours, Twitter going all a flutter, people being like, he almost fought Miro, and then other people being like, no, they were kidding, it was a whole thing, and everything coming like, back and forth, like these huge lobbies. And it's like, if I'm in the locker room and we just put on this show and all people want to talk about is how two dudes in the, like one dude in the back choked another dude, I'm pissed.
Yeah.
I'm livid.
Oh, if I'm MJF and Adam Cole, I would like to speak to HR, you know? It's like, I would like to speak to the manager.
But... But we don't know even know what the pecking order is, but there's certainly neither of them is above CM Punk. Certainly not when it comes to Tony Khan, who, I mean, he doesn't seem like the kind of guy who can do that. He doesn't seem to have that facility. He doesn't appear to. And all evidence, again, just going by track record now, this is twice in a row. So there's no reason to believe when CM Punk comes back, if he comes back, that this will not happen again. And this is just, I'm only basing this off of what I heard and read with my own two eyeballs and what's happening right now.
Yeah, just really sad that it has to overshadow something that, regardless of feelings towards AEW as a company, this should have been so incredible for everyone involved. And
crowning fucking achievement, yeah, for real.
I mean, absolutely enormous. And as an English wrestling fan, like as a British wrestling fan, like amazing to have a stadium show back at Wembley. Like I know so many people that went, so many people that loved it, so many people that were so happy. But for the people that worked that show, for the talent that worked that show, to have the whole thing overshadowed, and that, you know, in the wrestling history books, it won't go down as AEW has biggest paid attendance at a wrestling show of all time. It will go down as CM Punk got up to CM Punk business again.
Brawl in.
Yeah, yeah. So, boo. Boo wins.
I have to wonder, because I did like that the Bucks put up that really sweet, like, MySpace-looking top eight collage of, like, here are all of the other people who, like, made this night happen. I put this in the group chat, but I'm going to put this out the podcast. Do you think that part of like the Bucks' big ass NBA style contract had a like, don't put us in this bullshit no more clause, where it was like, look, we're just not going to be involved in this nonsense anymore. Like, we don't want to deal with it.
I get disappointed though. Like I've not taken against them, but it really disappointed me with the Bucks and Kenny on this front, because if you want to still have the title of executive vice president, then like be one, because what are you doing other than showing up and taking the money? I kind of felt like that was a little bit shit, you know, just like, yeah. We love all these people, there's no need for this. And it's like, do something about it then. If you're saying you started this company, if you're saying you still run this shit, then like run it.
I'm sorry, Dr. Frankenstein, did your monster kill a girl by the river? That is your problem.
No, his monster hired the dog that keeps biting him. Like, that's what happened.
That's the same difference. I mean, they're not going to be putting on the Ritz on a stage. It's never going to happen.
No.
That was the scrum.
That did upset me a little bit, because I'm like, are you just... Because basically what they said when they signed the new deal, right? They were like, we got a ton of money and we hardly ever have to work. Yay. So what they said was, we just got amazing part-timer contracts. And also, we have nothing to do with the running of this company. And it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it's essentially a please don't go to WWE contract.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
I would regret signing that right now if I were. Because, like, ugh, yikes.
They're just sitting there in matching hot dog outfits going, yeah, somebody confess. We won't be mad.
We're all looking for whoever did this.
Yeah. And I hope whoever it is, they get spanked on their balls and butt. Stay part of the conversation with Tights and Fights on all of our social media channels, including Blue Sky. Most of us are there too. Links are in the show notes, and we come back paying tribute and looking ahead. That's up next on Tights and Fights.
The Greatest Generation, Maximum Fun's irreverent, potty-mouthed Star Trek podcast is a big deal.
How big? It's the only Star Trek podcast big enough to have our very own live show tour. And we're inviting all Star Trek fan Max Funsters everywhere.
We're calling it the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. And this year we're going to celebrate and roast Star Trek V, The Final Frontier.
We're going to go to a bunch of cities. And GreatestGenTour.com has all the info.
That's greatestgentour.com for dates and ticketing info for the Share Your Embarrassment Tour.
Share your embarrassment and grow stronger from the sharing.
They've got a podcast, Tights and Fights is the name.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Lublin, and I'm joined today by...
Danielle Radford.
And...
Lindsay Kelk.
Now it's time to give one corner of wrestling some extra attention. This is our main event. Last week was a rough one for wrestling fans. We lost hardcore icon and WWE Hall of Famer Terry Funk just days before we lost one of the biggest stars of today, Bray Wyatt. Why don't we start with Terry Funk?
You realize that you must live not in the future, because there is none. You must live in the past. Give up that belt, or I'll stick your neck out one more time for me. Stick it out for me, Flair. you gutless individual! I'm talking to you!
That's enough.
Stick it out!
There's no ECW or really modern hardcore wrestling without Terry Funk, I believe. Even though guys like Bruiser Brody and Abdul the Butcher, you know, he's worked with those guys, but he bridged this gap from the old territory days to this upstart promotion, which then bled out figuratively and literally into the rest of professional wrestling. I think when you look at his legacy, which is way deeper than that, that might almost be the part that you don't think about.
The first time I really heard anything about Terry Funk was when I was reading Have a Nice Day, and just like hearing about, again, the influence that he had on like all of the hardcore wrestling that came out of him and all or came after him. And then also just hearing about what a good dude he was and how he was always one of those people who wanted to be a mentor and wanted to support the next generation instead of like being one of those people who you start getting older and you're like, you get scared of the younger generation and you want to kind of keep them down so you get more years on top. He was someone who was always trying to like make those connections, and you know, he never pulled the ladder up. If anything, he like got more ladders. He brought in.
Yeah. He used his body as a ladder. Like, yes, it would seem that is what happened here. Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? I mean, on one hand, I'm like, oh, he had a good long life, and we love that.
Yes.
We don't see it often enough. But I was so shocked when I heard the news, and I was so shocked at how old he was, because I just think my brain couldn't register that he was that old, because he just seems so omnipresent. I can't say the right words. I'm like, it's not omniscient. Or maybe he was omniscient, and that's what he knew.
That's how he knew. He knew that hardcore wrestling was going
to
be it.
No AEW all in for me, he said. But no, he just seemed to be everywhere. And like you say, I think his stamp and his personality is so visible. And I love that he seemed to have been so loved. Like, we love that they didn't have to like dig up people to say something nice. Everyone already had something nice to say.
Yeah.
We just recently watched Roadhouse. Oh, so that was so weird.
Yes.
When it was like, oh, wait, shit, we just watched this. And I was like, I'm on record as having been a big fan of Beyond the Mat, putting it on my online dating profile to weed out the non-marks.
Yeah. Smart.
So it's, even though I wasn't that aware of his work when I was younger, because obviously he was older, it predates me. Actually, it doesn't, because it goes on forever. Like, I knew him from Beyond the Mat, I knew him from Roadhouse. Like, oh, it was a bit, I mean, I'm really struggling this week in general to talk about any of these things, because it really shook me. It really shocked me. I was very, very surprised and had to have a sit down and be like, wait, what? Terry Funk? Wait, what? How old? Like, and for things to only go from bad to worse, like, it was a wild one.
I remember, I mean, and Beyond the Mat, which if you have not, I can't imagine there are many listeners of this podcast who have been longtime wrestling fans who have not watched it. It is a documentary from 1999, takes you behind the scenes of wrestling from developmental territories to the rise of ACW to WWF at the height of the Attitude Era. Mm-hmm. And the portrait of Terry Funk that you get there, and he would have already come off of his time in WWE as Chainsaw Charlie when he had the pantyhose over his head. But you have this portrait of a guy who's literally given everything he has, including his body, to wrestling. He can barely move. You know, his family just wants to spend time with him, and he still wants to have one more match. And his buddy who was upset he wasn't on the card, Terry makes him the guest referee. To make sure he's included. And I think he puts over Bret Hart in what was supposed to be his last match. That's in, I think, 1998. Let's say it's 1998. He wrestled his actual last match 17 years later. Mm. His last match was October 24th, 2015, against Jerry Lawler. And he put Lawler over. Like, the guy just had... And maybe it just comes from being part of a wrestling family, but he had a 50-year career, and he did a lot for a lot of people and appeared to have almost no ego about it.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that comes from coming from a wrestling family and having a legacy, but you don't see that on many people. that he just seemed to, I'm speaking to someone who obviously did not know him, never met him, but loved the business more than he loved himself. I just think that is very admirable. As someone who, again, works in an industry where some people, like Danielle said, pull a ladder down to bring others up and other people knock that ladder out of people's hands. I find it just eternally admirable when someone grows their industry and offers their knowledge and support to others. And there is no end of people that will tell you Terry Funk did that for them.
Yeah.
I know Ric Flair is still with us, but it kind of feels like Terry Funk was the last of a generation of just like, I don't know, just like tough guy Texas territory wrestlers. You know, Ric Flair still around.
Well, Arn has a gun, so.
Arn has a gun. But even Arn, I would put Arn a little bit later than Terry Funk.
Yeah, I agree.
It's crazy. It's what a blessing he lived to be 79 years old.
God, amazing. Really?
Because the way he put his body through and the real hardcore stuff was happening when he was in his 50s.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
It could never be me. That's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah,
could never be me. But yeah. Wow, to love something that much.
Now, the other news came as a lot more of a shock. Bray Wyatt disappeared for a while. Nobody really knew what it was. We heard vague health problems here and there. Then we had heard he was close to a return. And now we find out that he has suddenly died from... apparently, he had a pre-existing heart condition. He had COVID earlier in the year. And that is never a good cocktail. So he has passed away. He was only 36 years old. Damn. Leaves behind children. Fiance, his father. At first, I thought when I read the announcement, I thought it was his father who had passed away. And even that was like, oh, Mike Rotunda was young. I can't believe that he's gone. I loved him. And then to find out that it's his son is just, it's heartbreaking for the family. It just feels like even the first thing I thought of was his family.
Yeah.
And
he is like undeniably, people are gonna look back at some of the stuff that he did. We've already seen like shades of things that he's done. Like obviously that amazing standout will never be repeated cinematic match against John Cena. Just his ability to be creative in such a way that like it didn't just extend to him. Like he could, have these ideas that were able to include other people and he would bring people with him. I've heard nothing but, I mean, just the amount of wrestlers who have come out to share personal stories about the way that this man, because you got to remember also, he came up through like FCW. So that means that these dudes have known each other for at least like 20 years. Not even like counting like just him being around because of his dad, but him being wrestling with like the same folks and him also being someone, you know, after Raw, Becky Lynch, or I don't remember if it was on Raw because I watched it later, was crying and told this beautiful story about how like, you know, I just put someone through a table and my first tables match, I didn't know how to set up tables. And so like he took me aside and showed me how to set up the table. You know, you see the fans put up this thing of like them waiting and him coming over, talking to the kid, remembering the kid's names. Everyone has something fantastic to say about what a sweet person he is. And they're like, yeah, like if you could be tired, you could be anything, but Wyndham shows up and he gives you that little laugh and he would give you that energy that would get you to keep going. And we obviously, as fans and for the business, we lost someone who could have been a creative drive in this business for decades upon decades to come. We lost someone who was still able to wrestle, but was so good on the mic and with everything around it that he could have chosen his, you know, if ever he decided he wanted to stop wrestling, he was always going to have a place in the wrestling business because there's a million things that he was able to do. He was a virtuoso. And for his family, I can't imagine what it is they're going through. And for his friends, and it has been a real teary week. There were beautiful tributes to both Funk and to Bray Wyatt on both WWE and on AEW. House of Black's tribute in particular to Bray Wyatt definitely was a tearjerker. I cried for sure. Seth, oh God, I can't even. Seth at like a house show talked about how much he loved the Fireflies and like gave out this huge dedication. And it's another thing. Yeah. When it's like, it's hard watching people that you also enjoy being so crushed by the loss of their friend as well.
Yeah. I was just going to shout out, I know Tights and Fights fave, but LA Knight, I thought, did a spectacular job of honoring him on SmackDown. And I saw some people complaining that they kept the show running, but it's like, that's their job. Like they have to keep the show running. And I also think he would want them to keep the show running. Like,
yeah,
this is a man who kept the show running, you know, like he was the whole damn show. So I thought LA Knight did a beautiful job. I still don't think I believe it. Does that sound crazy? Like, I'm still expecting him to pop out in the mask and be like, I'm here. And I'm like, oh, you practical joker, you. It's nuts. I was at WrestleMania 30, that match against John Cena that was one of the most singular experiences in wrestling, because the feeling and the vibes and with the Fireflies and in the arena and it all went dark and they had the band playing. And I just remember that as such, and it, you know, wrong result on that match, but that's not his fault.
New Orleans. We're here.
I remember that match being so iconic and significant and just so different. Yes. And refreshing. And then the other main thing I remember, I went to a SmackDown. I can't remember what year it was. Someone immediately is screaming it at me at home, but it was SmackDown. It was recorded on Valentine's Day. Jeff took me to Anaheim for Aww. Valentine's Day.
He knows you.
He knew. It may have been 2017. I think it was 2017. It could have been 2018. I know I was using the Snapchat Hello Kitty filter, so that dates it. But Bray was champion, and he came out, and it's a small arena. It's not a big arena in Anaheim. And the thank you, Brays, and the you deserve it was so intense. And we were sat really close to the front. And he was crying in the ring when they were chanting, you deserve it. And that just made us all cry because he was supposed to be a heel. And it was like, good luck. You're never going to be a heel again. We love you so much. And the love that poured out of that arena, and that you could see it affecting him, and that made that affect you, and it's affecting me now. But that I've seen so many wrestling shows, and to remember both of those moments so clearly in my Swiss cheese brain, like, that's significant. And like Danielle said, I just think we have lost someone. I think it's incredible the legacy he leaves behind. It's indelible. There are kids out there today that have like had nightmares about that man. Yeah. That they will carry through their entire lives, as you should if you're a wrestling fan. Something should have given you nightmares that you saw when you were 7 years old. But the fact that what we have lost here is just devastating. Devastating to the wrestling community.
Too young, yeah. Fuck COVID.
You're right. It is 20. That was 2017. And he was also one of the most committed performers. Like, I think creative, there were a lot of times where creative didn't really do him any favors, but he was there 110%. And of anybody on that roster in the last 5 years that I would have expected to go be an actor and be successful, it would have been him.
100%.
Because he had that skill. And also to touch on LA Knight's promo, which I almost put over this week. Battle Royal win is great. The ads are great, but I think this them giving him that moment, I think that's his star maker. And
yeah.
And another example of Bray Wyatt helping somebody out, even from beyond. Julian, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, just a little bit about Bray. I'll say that in all those stories that we've heard this week have really been something. And I think the reason it's been weirder than, it'd be tragic if anybody around his age and of his status died. But I think the thing that's making it stand out for me is that Bray was so protective of that character. He was one of the few people in wrestling today where he was so protective of just every level of kayfabe for him. You almost didn't see Bray giving interviews, like for documentaries and stuff, the way they have everybody else doing.
And when he was doing morning interviews, he would be in character creeping people out at like 8 a.m.
Right. So it's just, I don't think anybody got a chance to tell these like Bray was one of my best friend stories for as long as they've known him in public anyway. So that's always, that's been kind of crazy. And I guess like that just kind of touches on the one thing that I always thought about with Bray is that Bray genuinely made me like believe in the magic of wrestling, of just like what the power of presentation can do and what like, you know, how you can blur the lines and like how if enough people buy in, if the company will give you the leeway, they will make you believe that like impossible things are happening in front of you. And it's just, I'll always go back to like that, the debut of The Fiend. It's like, we thought we had Bray Wyatt generally figured out as a character, but for him to, you know, add another layer onto who he was and like what he could do and just get an entire arena to be like, I will forget any criticism I had with you. I'm completely on board with what direction you take this with is it's a testament to it.
I don't know if this is an appropriate comparison to make. If you think about The Undertaker and his ability to intimidate, Bray Wyatt could be in the same vein, if not more so.
I'm not going to revise history and say they were all hits. I mean, that's the nature of being someone as creative as that.
Yep.
Some of them are going to be dead on arrival, but then you will find gold if you keep sticking with it. So. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, it was a shock. I also have to remind myself that he's really not coming back, because I just keep thinking like, you know, I saw somebody kind of express a sentiment that I agreed with, which was, I heard some people talking about how they can't wait for Bray to get into the Hall of Fame. And I thought, well, is he kind of young? And then I realized, oh, well, that's a stupid criticism to have right now. And I was like, I agree. Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like. Of like, there's just any like, yeah, maybe when he does a little bit. Oh, wait, no, that's not happening now. It just feels very, very surreal. Very, very weird. Just, yeah. Mm-mm.
Yeah. Let's hear from some of you. We got some great words from the Nation of Conversation. Here's just a couple of them. Josh S. says that Terry Funk got to wrestle in front of his grandkids, which is a massive lifetime win. And Ben said about Bray Wyatt, this one hits really hard as he was so integral into my coming into wrestling. Well, as with anybody who passes away that is of note, let's mourn their loss, but be grateful that we have a body of work of theirs that we can enjoy through eternity. If you've got anything to say about Bray Wyatt or Terry Funk, visit us on our social media channels via the links in our show notes. When we come back, we've got three things from wrestling that we want to share with you. That's up next on Tights and Fights.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
They've got a podcast, Tights and Fights is the name.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Lublin, and I'm joined today by...
Jenya Radford.
And...
Lindsay Kelk.
It's time to share the joy of wrestling with you. This is the three count.
Watch my three count. One, two, three. Get out of there.
That was sick.
Three, two,
three.
Danielle, what would you like to put over?
This was going viral about a week or so ago. I saw it just after the cutoff for last week's episode. Some kids, I think it's supposed to be like either from like a vlog or a music video, but they're standing outside of a venue, clearly smoking the hugest blunt I've seen in a minute. Because I'm old, so old people use vapes now. I'm not running around getting cigar stuff like inside my lungs. I would rather it be crystallized by things of which I do not know. But so they're smoking pot, and then you can see Moxley come out. This is clearly like after a match. I think he's still shirtless. And you see him taking a puff off of something and then walking away. It looks like he's smoking pot, but if you look at it quickly, he's clearly just like getting like a little bit off of cigarette off of him. But the fact that like he did that and let them tape it, and he just like basically randomly comes in on a shot, it's just really cool. And it reminds me of how much the ratio of my love for Moxley and my inability to watch his matches is like real up there, because I'm sorry, I don't want to watch someone hammer a bunch of wooden skewers in your forehead. He gonna look like the Dudleys, and I don't know, he's gonna look like those old school wrestlers. Devon? Yeah, Devon, where there's like Abdullah? A smile.
Yeah, he's getting that dusty forehead. That's what he's getting.
Which is funny, because we didn't used to be able to see it until it went HD, and then all the old school guys who used to blade, it was like, oh shit. So I can't watch those, because y'all know I'm a squeamish little baby. But I just love Mox being Mox and like going out there taking a puff off someone's smoke, and then like, because it looks like, I don't even want to know the full backstory. It literally looks like he walks by, takes a puff, and then keeps going on whatever adventure he's doing next. I assume it's like karate with Dave Carradine, where he just goes off to save the next town from a flood, you know, like going off to live the next round in his mystical journey. So yeah, I just wanted to put that over.
He's gonna pull the stakes out of his forehead and build a dam to save that town.
That's right, that's where he gets them.
Yeah. Oh, look, I have these stakes in my forehead.
He's like terrible Inspector Gadget, where it's just like, oh, it's all pieces that hurt you.
go Gadget staples in my tricep.
Oh, I hate it.
Lindsay, what do you want to put over?
Not staples in the bicep.
Tricep. It's worse. Either.
Anything. Oh, staples no. In the. Like, I don't want to hear an end to that sentence. I am putting over... Oh God, there were like a million things. I was like, it's just all going to make me cry, so I'm not doing it. I'm putting over Becky and Zoe Stark's match. I thought it was... I have been really hot and cold on this feud. The Becky, Trish, Zoe stuff, it's been hard to get behind. I don't think it's been done especially well. The crowd hasn't been into it. It's been really confusing to watch, because I want to be like, I love all these people. Why don't I care? But do you know what? That match they had this week was really good. Yes. Really good. And I think this is a testament to their ability and their skill. This has been going on for weeks now, and the crowd really haven't been behind it, and they got bumped from a pay-per-view, and you know what? They said, we don't fucking care. We're here to do our job. We're going to do it to the best of our abilities, and they did. I thought it was a really good match. I thought it was really well done. It made me more interested in it than I have been ever in this whole feud. Made me excited for the cage match. It gave Zoe Stark an incredible showcase. I think since she's been in as enforcer for Trish, we haven't been able to see how good she is in the way that we saw her in NXT. I was watching the match with Jeff, and she did a couple of off the rope maneuvers, and Jeff was like, oh my God, did you see that? Oh my God, did you see that? I'm like, well, I've seen her do these things, because she's actually incredibly technically capable and proficient, but we haven't seen it because she's been too busy being, I'm gonna beat you up now. And it was, I thought, really a great to see her be all that she can be, because Zoe Stark is an incredibly talented performer.
Yes.
And I want to see more of that, please. But I loved it. And in a wider sense, just putting over all the women in the industry this week and right now, because they deserve it. And they are doing great work. And I'd like to see more of that, please.
You know, there's a real civil war happening in wrestling right now. We have the WWE fans and the AEW fans. They were once siblings, now torn asunder, each rooting for their own promotion.
That Kane they and like. AEW? Oh, nope, didn't work, Danielle.
And recently, prior to All In, or as I call it, the CM Punk incident part two, MJF was answering questions in at a fan forum, and they asked him about that, and this was his answer.
And the way they communicate with each other, it's like all out war.
Mm-hmm.
And like, just so you guys know, it's not like, that's not what's going on. Like with like the wrestlers, like we're all rooting each other on because realistically, the better the two companies are doing, the more money we're going to make. So like, stop arguing. Like we're all freaking having a blast.
There you go. So there's a little insight from MJF. Cutting you in a little shoot that the wrestlers are supporting each other.
Man,
if there's that one.
Yeah.
apart from that one guy.
Apart from look, Punk.
If there is one thing that you can trust MJF to do is to get up there and championship all of wrestling, make sure to throw in a little heel dig so that you don't forget who he is, and then wrap it up by selling a match or a pay-per-view. That man is fucking good.
Yeah, he's graduating from Wrestle University with first-class honors, yeah. I believe.
God, would I love to see him and Paul Heyman do a segment together.
Ooh.
Into the veins, please.
Don't do that to me. Don't give me hope.
Oh, I need a nap now. That does it for this episode of Tights and Fights. This week, your hosts were Danielle Radford and Lindsay Kelk, along with me, Hal Lublin. Go to sagafterstrike.org, support the WGA, Union Solidarity. Let's hope this comes in for a landing sooner rather than later. We all want to get back to work. Danielle?
Yes, we do. Desperately all want to get back to work. With fair work and not AI and all that good stuff. Something that I can plug is I am still, I think, episode 4 of Dimension 20's Mentopolis, the TTP RPG that I am on is just went up on Wednesday. That goes up every Wednesday. And then on Thursdays, it is the, we do the adventuring party where we kind of like, you know, like woosah and talk about what happened and kind of debrief after the game. And so episode 4 just came out. That means we have 2 episodes left in Mentopolis. It was a super blast. So y'all go watch it.
Lindsay?
I have a book coming out in North America on Tuesday. Love Me Do is finally has come home to the US of A and Canada on Tuesday, September 5th. Love Me Do will be officially released here in States. And as I say, Canada, that's important to me. I like Canada. Bret Hart's from there. So now I have to apologize to Canadians. Like, I've been to Canada so many times. Love a pickle barrel. Yeah, I'm super excited. The book will finally be out here. Ebook, audiobook, paperback. Go nuts, whatever you prefer. Feel free to request it at your local library. Feel free to download it, read it wherever you feel like, as long as, like, you know, like it's a legit download. Like, don't do the other thing to me, please. And yeah, thanks to one of our Twitter followers, Diane, D-Y-A-N-N-E, who has requested it from the library, which made me so happy because that means lots of people get to read it.
Our producer is Fun and the Pun, Julian Burrell. Senior producer at Maximum Fun is Laura Swisher. Mike Eagles, the voice behind our theme music. We're putting you over for that, buddy. Thank you to all the Max Fun members that keep this show going. Keep up with us all week long on all of our social media channels. You can find those in the show notes. Find our Tights and Fights WrestleMania shirt at MaxFunStore.com. Celebrate ice cream Christmas all year long. We'll be back next week for more, you guessed it, wrestling.
Here comes the pain, bow to the masters, this is a podcast, they are podcasters. Max Fun's the network, Tights and Fights is the name.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.